Now, Attila the Stockbroker, also known as John Bain, has been a punk poet and a musician and songwriter for 35 years. In that time, he's performed at over 3,000 gigs in 24 countries, published 7 books of poems, and has been a prolific recording artist. And John joins me now. Welcome to Phoenix FM, John.
Hello, mate. Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good.
Good. Yeah. Now, is it all right if I call you John, or should I call you Attila?
I don't care. I mean, if you call me Attila, it'll mean people know who I am in terms of my work. That's all. That's the only thing.
Well, we know you're Attila the Stockbroker.
So yeah, absolutely.
Where on earth did that name come from?
Well, I worked as a clerk in a stockbroking company 34 years ago. I hated them. They hated me. One day someone told me I had the manners of Attila the Hun. And I thought Attila the Stockbroker would be a good stage name. Actually, it was 35 years ago. I started in 1980. And basically, it stood me in very good stead because being called Attila the Stockbroker got me quite a lot of my early gigs. I mean, I did my first gig in Bush Fair Playbarn in Harlow on the 8th of September 1980, supporting the Defects, the Condemned and the Unborn Dead. Basically started shouting poetry and thrashing the mandolin at punk gigs all over the place around Essex and further afield. Did a single which got picked up by John Peel, then did a session for John Peel, got a record deal with Cherry Red Records, and the rest is history. I mean, the important thing about the moment is I've just published my autobiography, Arguments Yard, which details all this amazing kind of stories and stuff that I've been involved in. I mean, you know, I've earned my living as a poet for nearly 35 years, which I'm quite proud of, you know, because there is this traditional kind of view of poetry as being something that's very marginal, that nobody likes, you know. I mean, I've got a T-shirt that I wear that I sell at gigs as well. It's a great quote from one of my poetic mentors, Adrian Mitchell. Most people ignore most poetry because most poetry ignores most people. Now, I set out to do the opposite. I write poetry for people who don't like poetry. That's the whole point.
Right, I get it. Well, now, your autobiography, Arguments Yard, as you say, it's published this month. Why did you decide to write it now, and did you find it a difficult thing to do?
I started it in 2004, but my mother got Alzheimer's, and my wife and I spent 6 years looking after her, and the sheer emotional strain of that meant it was very, very difficult to actually sort of continue with the autobiography, because I was, you know, still gigging. I do 100 gigs a year. I had 4 stepchildren who were growing up. So basically, I left it, and I didn't really start again until after she died in 2010. But no, it was very easy to do, really, because, I mean, you know, as I say, I've done all these gigs in 24 different countries. I've filled in for Donny Osmond. I've been supported by the Manic Street Preachers. I've been thrown out of my own gig by John Cale, one of my all-time musical heroes. I mean, there's all these stories and the times that I grew up in, you
hang
know,
on,
I mean...
Hang on a minute. You stood in for Donny Osmond. We've got to know more about that.
Yeah, I stood in for Donny Osmond at a gig. He was supposed to be playing the Marquee Club in 1991. He was reinvented by his management company or whatever as a rocker. And there were these photos of him in a leather jacket with studs in it. And he was doing sort of medium-sized rock venues around the UK. But something happened. I think it was something with terrorism or something. And he was too scared to fly. So at one day's notice, I had a call from a mate of mine at the time was programming at the Marquee in London, saying, Attila, to make you laugh, Donny Osmond's supposed to be playing for tomorrow night. But he's pulled out. Now, we don't want to shut the venue for the night. So basically, will you come and do a gig standing in for Donny Osmond? We'll pay you. We'll give you as much beer as you want, as big a guest list as you like. And so I thought, yeah, this will be a laugh. So I went along, the gig was sold out. About half the people who booked to see Donny Osmond decided to come in. Obviously, they got refunds of their tickets. About half of them decided to come in and just because, you know, they were there, which meant I was confronted by quite a lot of sort of disappointed ladies in their mid-30s, plus some husbands who came up to me and told me how happy they were that they were going to hear Attila rather than Donny. And then I did the set. I started my set. About half of them walked out, and the other half really enjoyed it. And I got an encore. And so I finished with Puppy Love, with my own version of Puppy Love.
Now I'm doing
this tour around the country, I actually do Puppy Love as part of my set and get the audience to sing along to it. So that's quite fun.
Fantastic. All right, let's take you back to the late 1970s when you first started, really. What inspired you to get up on that stage and start performing?
Well, I mean, I'd always loved music and words. My father was a talented amateur poet. My mother, a talented amateur musician, a pianist and singer. And from a very early age, I was writing little poems and songs. And then basically I saw The Clash. at the Rainbow in 1977.
Right.
And I taught myself to play the bass guitar. I played bass in punk bands for a few years, but I was far too ebullient and confident, and I had too many words in my head to stay there playing bass. So I started getting up on stage in between bands, shouting my poems. So I got the stage name Matilda the Stockbroker.
Yeah.
And that's really when it started. I mean, it was punk that inspired me really to start performing in the way that I'm doing now. As with so many people, I mean, I've got a song called Comandante Joe, which is precisely about that, about Joe Strummer and about punk and about the effect that it had on you know, people of my generation. I mean, I was 19 in 1977, which obviously was a good time, because the whole musical world just exploded in front of me in exactly the way I wanted. You know, the punk ethic, the DIY ethic, you know, anyone can do this. You don't have to be a highly trained musician or whatever. This is for everybody now. Just get up there and do it. And that's what I did.
Right, yeah. Well, now, listening to you speak, I think I already know the answer to this question, but you've got a passion for fairness, justice and equality, and it shines through in most of your work. Is there any sign of you mellowing as you get older?
No, exactly the opposite.
Really?
There's far more to get angry about than there was 50 years ago, you know, 30 years ago. I mean, you know, everything that my parents' generation fought for has been destroyed, and it's horrible. Absolutely. I'm more passionate now than I was before.
Really? Well, I mean, politics has just got a lot more interesting with the election of Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, I've just rejoined the Labour Party.
Did that surprise you? And what's your take on all that?
No, it didn't surprise me. I mean, I think for a long time, it's just people were just so frustrated with the sort of bland, you know, horrible, bland centre ground. And the politics is bland. You know, it was bland. And it's been really stirred up. And that whatever your thoughts on Corbyn in terms of his politics, it's really good for democracy that we now actually have two parties that are really different from each other.
That's
which
right.
Stands for different things.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know,
fantastic.
Absolutely.
And now we've got Lord Ashcroft's allegations about David Cameron's time at university. Has that inspired you to write anything?
No, because it's just a smokescreen. It's a smokescreen to cover up the Tory policies of brutalising the poor and covering up for their banker friends. I don't give a damn what Cameron did with a private part in a pig in whatever 1980 whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care. But that's just a smokescreen for all the other stuff. You know, it's put there deliberately to cover up for all the terrible things that they're planning to do. I'm not into tittle tattle really. I'm not interested.
Also related to that, I mean, what do you think of the media coverage on those two stories?
I've got a lot of stuff about the media. I've got a poem called The Bible According to Rupert Murdoch. I mean, you know, we don't have freedom of the press in this country. There's the freedom of three billionaires who own newspapers to inflict their views on everybody else, and the freedom of many people, sadly, to believe nonsense and lies, and to vote and behave directly in the opposite of their own economic and social interests.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've read the great book, The Ragged Trousers Philanthropist by Robert Tressel, but that sums up my attitude. Anyway, we should be talking about my book and the tour and stuff like that.
We will, I promise.
That's what we need to do, because, I've got a book to promote and gigs to do and stuff,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, just a little bit more about you and what you've done, basically. You've performed at the last 26 Glastonbury festivals. That's an amazing achievement. Have the audience changed over the years?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, completely, really. I mean, my first Glastonbury in 1983, the deal was that I got 50 quid, as many guest tickets as I want, and some cider. So all my mates got in. You know, you imagine that now when tickets are about 250 quid each sell out in about 1 second once they come on sale. So I got there, I got the cider, and basically I did my set supporting Rick Mayall doing his Kevin Turvey character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I drank the cider, and then it was a lovely sunny day, and I was thinking to myself, there's all these people here walking around naked. You know, I can do that. It's really hot. I'm going to strip off. So I stripped off, lay in the sun on my back, naked, and went to sleep. About 3 hours later, my mate Seething Wells, no longer with us, RIP, woke me up by pouring a bucket of water over me, saying, John, you're burning, your bits are burning. Well, wake up. And my bits were burning.
Oh, dear.
I got sunburned in places that no person, a man especially, should ever get sunburned.
Oh, no.
And but fortunately, Arabella Churchill, Sir Winston's granddaughter, who at the time was running the cabaret tent, she's no longer with us either, sadly, she gave me some cream to put on my sore bits. And I still enjoy Glastonbury. I love Glastonbury. I mean, you know, it's changed a lot, but I always say it's the one festival, and I do loads of festivals, the one festival where you can go to where regardless of, you know, you have a good time, even if there's nobody actually you know, booked a play that you actually like, just wandering around and being a part of the atmosphere is in itself absolutely wonderful.
Fantastic. Well, of course, you've got lots of great stories to tell like that, I know, and they're all being collected together in your autobiography, Arguments Yard. What about football as well? Football's another one of your passions, isn't it?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm a huge Brighton of Albion fan, and my passion for the game and for the club that I support, my politics, my feeling about social justice and fairness, actually came together in the late 1990s when our ground was stolen by property speculators,
right.
Basically.
Yeah.
And we had to fight for the existence of the club. And I got very, very involved in that. I was one of the leaders of our independent supporters campaign to keep the club alive and to campaign for our new stadium, which we've now got. We're now, as you may know, 3 points clear at the top of the championship.
Absolutely,
and for quite a long time, in fact, from 14 years, I was the stadium announcer as well.
Right.
We had to play two seasons. We had to play our home games at Gillingham, 70 miles away. And then we came back and played a rickety old athletics track, horrible athletics track, called Withdean in Brighton. And now we've got our new stadium, which is finally absolutely brilliant. The Amex, or Falmer, as I still call it.
Right.
I for 14 years I was the stadium announcer and poet in residence, which meant that I was playing. I mean, I had a Phil Collins band, loads of punk and ska and reggae. I'm probably the only PA announcer ever to play Stockhausen before a home game. That was really good fun.
Well, as you say, you know, they're top of the championship right now. It's a bit early in the season to say, but do you think they're going to do it? They're going to get promotion?
We've got a good team.
Yeah.
We've got a good team. It's balanced, so we don't get too many injuries. I think there's a chance, absolutely. I mean, and whatever. I mean, the league that we're playing in is a very competitive league. It's, if we think about it, right, okay, in early 1997, we were 92nd out of 92 in the whole football league, knowing that we had no ground for the following season.
Wow, yeah.
We saved ourselves with a 1-1 draw at Hereford on the last game of the season to stay in the football league. Then played our home matches for Gillingham for 2 years. And that actually there's one of the stories in the book, which is actually one of the funniest ones of all. Because during that time at Gillingham, I used to play all kinds of stuff, but I played a lot of punk rock. And one day, it was a Boxing Day lunchtime kickoff. So obviously we had to travel from Brighton to Gillingham really early. And I put on Anarchy in the UK by the Sex Pistols. And this policeman ran into the box saying, take it off. You can't play that.
No.
It's banned.
Yeah.
And I said, hang on a minute. I didn't know there was a list of records that were banned. And then why would it be banned? And he said, it's obvious, isn't it? It's obvious why it would be banned. I said, no, not to me. And he got really angry. He said, it incites violence in the crowd.
Yeah.
And I said to him, officer, I bought Anarchy in the UK in the black sleeve on EMI Records on the day that it came out in 1976, and I've heard it many, many times since, and not once has hearing it given me the slightest desire to cause any kind of violence anywhere. However, I've also been to all 92 football league grounds, and every time I've heard In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins, I've wanted to commit serious acts of criminal damage.
Fantastic.
He didn't get the joke.
No.
The Kent Police tried to get me banned from doing the PA, but our then chairman, Dick Knight, got me, got the ban rescinded, and basically on the condition that I didn't play Anarchy in the UK anymore, which I didn't, but I did play Smash It Up by the Damned, and I Fought the Law and White Riot by the Clash.
Yeah.
and they didn't seem to mind that.
Oh,
but that was quite funny.
Well, you know what? I've got to get your book and have a read of this. Where can we get hold of it?
It's published by Cherry Red Books, which is the book arm of Cherry Red Records, who did my first two albums in the early 80s.
Yeah.
It's available. I mean, I'm sure it's in some bookshops, the sort of lefty bookshops, and I think hopefully soon in places like Waterstones. You can get a copy from my website, attilathestockbroker.com, through PayPal, and from the Cherry Red website, cherryred.co.uk. And it's available through Amazon and all that sort of thing. If you just put Arguments Yard Attila the Stockbroker into Google, you'll get there straight away.
Right, fantastic. Now, so what's coming up next for you, John? You say you've got a big tour going on.
Well, I am at the moment. I mean, yes, I'm doing. I'm doing about another. I'm doing 40 gigs altogether. On Friday's the big one in London at the Borderline. I've got my old friend Steve Lamack, who I used to roadie for, Colchester Boy, BBC Six Music and Radio 1 DJ. He's DJing and doing some introducing. My mates, the Newtown Neurotics from Harlow in Essex, where I lived for quite a long time, are playing. Jeremy Hardy, the radical comedian.
Yeah.
David Rovix, lots of other people. Then I've got stacks all over the place, specifically for listeners in Essex. I'm doing Malden, near Chelmsford.
The Blue Ball Hotel,
on the 15th of October. I've already done Harlow. That's the only other. That's the other Essex gig that I'm doing, you know, on this tour. So basically, the 15th of October in Malden.
And you're being supported by Stephen Foster Pilkington.
By Steve Foster Pilkington, a great, a nice bloke, a good mate, and an excellent fiddle player.
Yes, I've met him, and he's been in on the show. So he's a lovely guy. So that's Thursday, the 15th of October. You'll be performing your
Wednesday.
It says
Wednesday. I tell you, like, you're right. Thursday, the 15th of October. Absolutely correct.
Right, so it's poetry and songs at the Blue Boar Hotel in Malden. Yeah, doors in open at 7:30. Supported by Stephen Foster Pilkington. Well, Attila the stockbroker, stroke John. Thank you so much. You know what? You've made my. That's the easiest interview I've ever done, I think.
Well, a lot of people say that about me. I do have the gift of the gab. It's true. It's fair to say.
Well, it's fantastic, and thanks so much for joining us on Phoenix FM today. And good luck in everything you do. I could listen to you for hours.
Thanks so much, mate.
All right. All the best. Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye.